Welcome to the Castle of Spirits True Ghost Stories podcast, brought to you by www.castleofspirits.com, where you can read 4,600 plus true ghost and paranormal stories
submitted by listeners and readers just like you.
Just like yourselves. I am the ghost keeper, Jane.
Hello, Jane. I'm the ghost keeper, Vince.
Hello, Vince. It's really nice to meet you.
Likewise, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jane, what have we got on tap today?
Well, I thought maybe we could read a few stories.
Ghost stories.
Uh-huh. Maybe with a very slight Thanksgiving theme, maybe not.
Well, it is a horror-themed holiday and
podcast. It's a horror-themed holiday?
Oh, sure it is. For a lot of people, there are a lot of people out there who are not looking forward to Thanksgiving with the family.
Oh, okay. I can understand that.
And we're here to kind of guide you in as far as, you know, getting you into the mood of the horror that you were about to face, or if it's already past Thanksgiving when you're hearing this, getting prepped for next year.
Or just enjoying some good old-fashioned spooky stories that may or may not have the word Thanksgiving in them.
There you go. So you found quite a few stories on the website submitted by readers over the years that had to do with Thanksgiving in some way?
Yeah. If you just search the word Thanksgiving on the archive, a bunch of stories pop up. So I chose a couple out of there. And I guess if you're ready, I can read one to you right now.
I'm always ready.
Oh, boy.
Bring on the feast.
The Feast of Frights. Oh. That was the fakest, most forced laugh I've ever heard.
I'm working on it. I'm working on it. Okay. It's my showbiz laugh.
So we're going to start off with a story called Thanksgiving, submitted from Anonymous in New Jersey, USA, July of 1998. I'll never forget that Thanksgiving more than 20 years ago. My mother always invited a few extra guests for the holiday meal, usually people who had no family in town. One of the invited guests was an elderly man named Don, who lived in a nursing home several blocks from our house. All of us kids just adored him because he would sit with us for hours, playing games and doing magic tricks. Our grandfather had passed away several years before, and Don was our adopted grandfather. It was snowing outside, and my brother, my sister, and I were sitting by an upstairs window, watching the snow fall and looking for the familiar sight of Don walking up the street. The phone rang, and I ran to answer it, knowing that Mom was busy in the kitchen. It was a lady who worked at the nursing home. After calling Mom to the phone, I ran back to where my brother and sister were. As I walked into the room, my brother shouted, "There he is!" I quickly glanced out the window, and there was Don, standing there, smiling and looking up at us and waving. We all hurried downstairs, anxious to let him in the door. At first, I didn't even notice the sad look on my mother's face. When we told her we saw Don and that he would be at the door any second now, she started crying. "I'm afraid not, sweetheart." She could barely get the words out. The phone call was from Mrs. White at the nursing home. Don passed away a short time ago. Naturally, none of us wanted to believe it. When we went to look outside where we had just seen him standing, no one was there. We were all sure that it was him. I realize now that he was just saying goodbye to us that day. Thank you again to Anonymous in New Jersey for submitting Thanksgiving in July of 1998.
I believe it.
For sure.
I totally believe that story. I have heard stories like that for ages. And it's funny. One of the scariest instances of a story like that happened in the movie, of all movies, Coal Miner's Daughter. It's the Sissy Spacek, Loretta Lynn movie, Tommy Lee Jones.
I saw that when I was very young. I don't remember much of anything about it.
That wasn't a horror movie, but there was a scene that terrified me as a child. Loretta Lynn is asleep in bed and she hears her father calling her. Mm-hmm. Or she hears somebody calling her name, and she goes outside, opens the front door, and she sees her father mm-hmm. calling her, waving his arm and walking toward her through a field. And then the camera cuts back to the guy, and it's one of the neighbors calling her, and he's coming with the news that her father's died. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, later she says, you know, he came to me, I saw him. That was the most chilling thing I'd ever seen as a kid.
Yeah.
Next to the, what was the one that kept me up, that gave me waking nightmares, night terrors? The Lizzie Borden story.
Oh, yeah.
The Legend of Lizzie Borden.
Oh, horror consumption was so much simpler back then, wasn't it?
It sure was. Lately, horror movies to me feel like, well, let's not get into it. We saw Saw.
We did. We watched Saw recently for the first time. I know. We were probably like the only two people in America who had never seen Saw. So we watched it.
Because I kept getting tired of people saying, you seen Saw?
Yeah, it was pretty much exactly what I expected. I don't feel like we'll continue with the sequels. I feel like you've seen one Saw movie, you've seen them all.
It's a seesaw experience.
But, you know, I'm open to arguments.
I am too. But back to the coal miner's daughter. Actually, no, back to the story that you just read.
Yeah. I just thought that there was something sweetly creepy about that story. Like, it's not a scary story. Dawn was clearly not there to, you know, frighten the children. But I think that there was probably a lot of emotion tied to him going there that day, both for him and for them. And, you know, it was his time, but he didn't want to disappoint or let anyone down. So,
well, I've heard stories like that from people that I know, mm-hmm. and, you know, of having seen a relative that just died.
Yeah. Tell me about that.
Well, right after my uncle died, my uncle had taken care of my grandparents, and they died, and then he died. And so on this occasion, my sister, she claimed that she saw the three of them standing in the doorway, like looking over her. When I got into the questioning aspect of it, she told me that she had been asleep and that she had just awakened and looked up and saw them. Mm-hmm. That's very easy to dismiss.
Yeah, sometimes.
But in the story you read,
yeah,
there were a bunch of different witnesses.
It sounded like three different kids or so. Yeah, and none of them were asleep or just waking up. They were excited and sitting there waiting for the person that they were excited to see. I mean, there could still be a rational explanation, right? I mean, so they're children, which children's perception of what's going on in the world around them is sometimes a little bit different than reality. It's snowing, which kind of, you know, can obstruct your view of things. And they were upstairs. It's not like they were at a window that's ground level. So all of these things together, it could mean that they saw a person.
They also had the expectation of seeing him.
Exactly, an expectation. And they could have just seen a person who was walking by. The person sees them. Maybe they're waving already. So the person stops and waves back, you know. I mean, I feel like if you want to look for a rational explanation, that could be it. However, I think that there's a lot of other things that go into a story like that. Like, if you know this person, you know how they walk, you know kind of their mannerisms. And I don't know, I tend to believe the story, even though I just like debunked it or offered a perfectly rational explanation for it. I do actually tend to believe it. Anyway, so that was a really long-winded post-story conversation. Vince, do you have a story?
I really do.
All right, let's hear it.
This one was anonymously written and submitted to the Castle of Spirits website in August of 2002. It is called Brother-in-Law's House. I always thought there was something about my brother-in-law's house. The following events happened to him and his family, as well as to me. His house was a smaller starter home. It had two stories. The main floor was where they spent most of their time. The top floor was the kids' playroom for a long time. It had a steep, pitched roof, which made it very difficult to stand up straight in. The time they first noticed something was weird about it was when the kids were little. They'd play up in the room night and day. The first time it happened, his oldest came running down the stairs, crying that an old man was upstairs. My brother-in-law went upstairs to see if there was anyone there. After looking around, upstairs and down, he figured that his daughter had quite an imagination and left it at that. He continued to allow them to play upstairs after that first experience. His kids would always come down after they were done and mention that they had talked to someone. Of course, my brother-in-law doesn't really believe in ghosts, so again, he passed it off as their imaginations. It wasn't until he talked to an older neighbor that he'd never really talked to before. The neighbor told him that there had been an old man who'd fallen victim to a burglar. The burglar shot the old man many times. The old man died in the same room where my brother-in-law's kids had their playroom. There was a blood stain that was left behind when the police cleaned up the body. From that point on, the kids played downstairs. My brother-in-law and his wife then moved their bedroom upstairs, thinking that it was safer for the kids. His wife worked graveyard as a certified nurse's assistant. He worked during the day, always. This is significant because my brother-in-law's wife had an experience during the day while my brother-in-law was at work. She had just got done with her graveyard shift and came home in time to see her husband off to work, as well as seeing the kids off to daycare. She went upstairs to sleep in the old toy room at 8 o'clock a.m. She couldn't fall asleep right away, but she didn't want to stay awake. She fought hard with herself to fall asleep when all of a sudden, out of nowhere, she could hear footsteps. Thinking it was my brother-in-law coming back from work because he forgot something, she relaxed. A few minutes later, the footsteps seemed to die down. She was almost asleep when suddenly she felt weight at the foot of the bed. She woke up and didn't see anyone. She told my brother-in-law about it, and they passed it off as the old man. One cold November night, they had a Christmas party to go to, and they needed a babysitter. I got chosen out of default. I don't scare easy, and I'm a big guy, 6'5", 250 pounds. I didn't think much of their ghost or anything else, since I never experienced anything like that in their house or anywhere else. I put the kids to bed at 9:30 in their room. It was around Thanksgiving, and there wasn't much on TV, so I flipped channels for a half an hour before finding a movie I wanted to watch. All of a sudden, there was a crash in the basement. It sounded like someone had broken in. I immediately ran downstairs and switched the lights on. There wasn't anything that seemed broken or out of place. Of course, walking back up the stairs was a different experience. It was almost as if someone was walking behind me, but I surely would have seen someone when I walked down there. The rest of the night was pretty much me standing guard by the kids' bedroom door with a broomstick. That was all I could find. Nothing else happened, and I mentioned it to my brother-in-law when he got home. He just told me that it happens pretty often to him, the crashing noise in the basement. I figured after hearing it that it was probably tied to the old man and his murder. I have since had other experiences in the same town where they lived. And that was Brother-in-Law's House, submitted by Anonymous in the USA in August of 2002. Now you may ask yourself why exactly I picked that story, and one of the things about that story that really jumped out at me was his experience of going downstairs and walking back up the stairs and feeling like there was something pursuing him.
Mm-hmm.
I have always experienced that.
Well, and that just feeds right into my fear of...
spiders. Clowns.
Being chased up the stairs.
Oh, yes.
Come on, you know this.
Well, for me, it's not always upstairs.
It's always up.
You know,
I'd rather be chased running downstairs.
I'd rather not be chased at all.
There's that.
But I think I may have also chosen this story subliminally because I had kind of a similar experience, not exactly the same, but I had some sort of strange experiences or perceptions when I used to babysit my nephew at my brother-in-law's house, my sister mm-hmm. and my brother-in-law's house. This is a long, long time ago. They had this house, and it wasn't a terribly old house. It was on a very busy street, so there was nothing really creepy about the house that you would look at and say, this place must be haunted. But of course, we know that it's no prerequisite.
Yeah. It's always the innocuous looking house that's
right
terrifying.
And there doesn't have to have been a murder or anybody mm-mm. dying in the house. There were a few times where I was really creeped out at that house. Now, that's not the first time that's ever happened. I usually get creeped out at houses that I'm not terribly familiar with, especially when I'm alone in the house. Mm-hmm. But I remember they had a couch and a TV. And of course, when the kid was asleep, I would spend a lot of my time at the couch watching TV. But the couch was not against a wall. The couch, the back of the couch, faced the entry to the living room.
Yeah, no, you don't want to have your back to the door.
Right. When you're on a couch, I want to be sitting on a couch with my back to the wall, mm-hmm. preferably facing the entry to the room, just in case a monster or a shadow person or a ghost decides to come in, or a killer.
That top hat man, he likes to sneak in.
Oh God, he's the worst. And there were so many times when I would just be sitting there watching the TV and I would spin around in the couch, mm-hmm. perceiving that there was something sneaking up on me.
My aunt's house always felt that way to me. Just a plain, normal looking house in a plain, normal looking neighborhood. But something about, I think the couch was also situated like that, like so that when you were sitting on it, your back was to the hallway. And
oh, yeah, no. Hallways are creepy to begin with. You can't put it. Yeah. No.
For some reason, I remember being at her house a lot alone, like when I was a teenager. I don't know why I was hanging out over there alone, but I remember sitting on the couch and just being really freaked out in general. I don't remember hearing anything or, you know, didn't ever hear any stories about the house was haunted. But the basement, it was a really deep basement. Like sometimes basements around here anyway, the ceiling is a little bit lower. But the basement in this house, the ceiling was as high as upstairs. So it felt very deep. And I remember sitting in the living room and being keenly aware of this big, dark, empty area directly beneath me and feeling like there has to be something down in that basement that's like listening to me walk around or listening to me on the phone. And
well, because I think that we sometimes assign consciousness to empty spaces.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's a good way to put it. Or when something is empty, it just becomes haunted.
Very much so.
Speaking of haunted.
Oh?
I don't know if you know this, Vince, but I have another story to read.
Do you? Well, then by all means, yeah, do it.
All right. This story is called Out of the Woods, and it was submitted by Anonymous in South Carolina, USA, in July of 2000. I was different back then. I was skeptical, cynical, and curious. I never thought it would happen to me, something so bizarre, something completely unexplainable by scientific standards. It changed my life. Moreover, it changed my heart, and it happened just like this. In 1992, I was in my sophomore year of college, and my roommate was from West Virginia. She took me down home with her for Thanksgiving break. It was unseasonably warm that year, if you'll remember. We were invited to go cross-country skiing along the Appalachian Trail with her brother Dean and some friends of his, and there ended up being six of us, all told. We stayed to the marked trails most of the time, but then one of the guys coaxed us into trying the woods. He told us he'd done it many times and knew the woods like the back of his hand. Being young and up for the challenge, we followed him. It took about an hour for him to admit that he had gotten us lost. Before we knew it, the sun was going down and it was getting cold. Eventually, all we had was moonlight on the snow for light. Needless to say, we were frantic, cold, hungry, and tired. We were fighting amongst ourselves about which direction we should take when I noticed Dean walking away from us towards the west. "Well, all right then," I called out and began following, and everyone else followed suit. He stayed a good 20 yards ahead of us, but I was able to keep sight of his silhouette in the moonlight. Eventually, we made it to a road. Everyone huddled up, and I turned to Dean and asked, "How do you know which way to go?" He just stared at me. "Huh?" he said. "I was following you." My mouth went dry and my heart dropped into my stomach. I turned to the group and asked who was in the lead, and they all said I was. They steadfastly denied ever having seen anyone ahead of me. To this day, I have no idea who or what I was following, and that's the truth. Thank you again to Anonymous in South Carolina for submitting Out of the Woods in July of 2000.
That's an amazing story.
I love that one so much.
I mean, it's got shades of doppelganger, but yeah. There is some sort of phenomenon that...
Yeah, I think it's called the third man factor. From my understanding, it's kind of a thing where like explorers, a lot of times it's attributed to explorers like in Arctic or Antarctic situations, wherever they go exploring. I get the two confused. Anyway.
One's up, one's down.
Yeah, yeah. So the idea being, you know, two people exploring. Who was it? Was it Sir Edmund Hillary that it happened to the first time? When it happened the first time, there were two explorers and they were frightened and lost and hungry and, you know, not doing real well. And when things would be at their worst, they would kind of believe or perceive somehow that there was a third man with them who was helping them in some way. And then in times where they were doing better, when they were fed or they were a little bit more comfortable or knew where they were going, this third man would disappear.
Right. I just looked it up and basically it is called the third man factor or third man syndrome. Mm-hmm. And it refers to situations, reported situations where there's been an unseen presence, mm-hmm. like a spirit or something that provides comfort or support during traumatic experiences. But I've also heard that it provides direction as well.
Yeah.
As in the case of the story you just read.
Mm-hmm. There's a really interesting Wikipedia article actually on the third man factor. And we'll link it in the show notes if you're interested in learning more about it. I think it's a really interesting topic. But hey, Vince, would you like to round off this set with another story?
Well, Jane, the story that I have to read next is a little bit of... so to say, old-fashioned haunting.
Yeah, that's what I'm here for.
This was written anonymously, and it came from Alabama, USA, so my mother's old stomping grounds, a place that I've been before. And this place is eerie in more ways than one. This story was submitted to the website in September of 2000, and it is called Ghostly Happenings in Our House. When I was 5 years old, my mom remarried and had another daughter. She already had me and my little sister, who was 2 at the time. She and my stepfather decided to move to central Alabama in order to be closer to the family. The house we moved into was rather old. It was built in the early 1900s. And there was another house kind of in front of us and off to the side, which had been built in the 1790s and had not had any inhabitants for over 50 years. The first night in our new home was very exciting for us. That night, after everyone had gone to bed, I woke up to a loud crash on the back porch. I got up to investigate when I heard my parents' bedroom door shut. I thought maybe my mom had woken up and gone outside for some reason, so I went into her room to kiss her goodnight before going back to bed. When I went in there, she was sound asleep and had not been awake at all. The next morning, I told my mother about what had happened. She told me that it was probably just the wind. A few months later, my sisters and I were sent to my grandmother's house to spend the night. My stepfather was out of town, so my mother was home all by herself. Before she went to bed, she hosed off the back porch, locked the screen door, and smoked one last cigarette in the living room. When she went to bed, she couldn't get to sleep because she could still smell a cigarette burning. She got up to investigate, but couldn't find anything anywhere. When she went back to bed, she was almost asleep when she heard the screen door to the back porch slam shut. She called my uncle to come investigate, but when he got there, he couldn't get inside because the screen door was locked. My mother turned on the light for the porch and opened the door to find the screen door locked and cigarette ashes strewn all over the porch. A few days later, someone in the neighborhood told my mom that earlier that day she'd seen a young man in a white t-shirt and blue jeans with a pack of cigarettes standing on the edge of their porch. Many other incidents happened in the house, such as lights coming on by themselves, but one thing that really scared my mother was when she was laying in the living room watching TV when she saw a rocking chair that I had gotten as a birthday gift out of the corner of her eye, moving steadily back and forth as though someone were sitting in it. The rocking chair all of a sudden started rocking back and forth really fast, as if whoever was sitting in it had stood up. Another incident occurred when my aunt was driving past our house on her way to work. She looked up into our yard and saw a decapitated woman floating across our yard. She thought maybe she was seeing things and turned around and came back. The woman was still there. She turned around and left so she could get to work, but when she looked back for a third time, the woman was gone. I was driving by your house yesterday. On my way to work, I saw this decapitated woman. So I turned around to take a better look, you know, just to see. And she was still there. So I said, no, the hell with this, and I left. But when I looked back, she was gone. So I guess everything's cool now.
That's peculiar. Well, off to work.
I have been written up too many times for being late. They're not going to buy this excuse. I want whatever Auntie Franny is drinking.
And her work ethic.
One day, while my sister and I were getting off the school bus, my friend asked me who the man that's dressed in a soldier's uniform was that was standing in front of the older house right in front of ours. When I looked up to see who it was, there was no one there. I told her that she was delirious, but about that time, other people began to notice the man also. Even the bus driver claimed to see it. My sister and I, on the other hand, saw nothing. When my youngest sister turned 5, my parents decided it was time to move to a larger house. We spent 2 months looking for a house in our area. We finally found one and decided to move in right before Christmas. On Thanksgiving Day, we went to my grandmother's to celebrate. We got home late that night, and I sat on the couch to watch some TV. I looked out the window right above the couch because I had heard the door open. My mother and stepfather were coming in from a walk in the field right behind our house. I looked at the house beside ours and noticed that an eerie green light was on in the kitchen. I told my parents when they came into the living room, but when they went to investigate, the light had gone out. Finally, moving day came. My mom had just graduated with her nursing degree, and as a present, we bought her a green Chevy S10 pickup truck. That night, us children were so excited about moving that we drove our parents out of the house due to our energy. They decided, rather than spending time with us, to sit outside in the truck and just talk. After about 5 minutes, something strange happened. All the lights inside and outside the truck began to flash on and off. My stepfather, who had not had anything happen to him while we were living in the house, started screaming. First brush with the unknown, he just loses it.
Oh, these irrational girls. There's nothing here.
Our parents ran back into the house, scared to death. The next day we moved, and we never went back to that house. No one lives there, and no one has lived there since we moved out. Neighbors still see lights in the house and strange figures around the grounds. That one was called Ghostly Happenings in Our House, written and submitted by the very prolific anonymous, this time from Alabama, in September of 2000. Jane, what did you think of that story there?
No, that was a really great story. I am curious why she had to hose off the back porch every night. Why was that a nightly chore? What's going on in Alabama?
The image that came into my head was that there was a lot of blood on the porch for some reason because I'm reading a horror story, right?
Because you're a freak.
But these were normal people, so I'm thinking maybe mud?
My brain immediately went to cicadas.
Oh, God.
She's like power washing cicadas off of the...
Now, yeah, if you out there have ever hosed off your front porch on a nightly basis, yeah. let us know why you do that. And yeah. maybe, is it something we should be doing? I mean, look outside.
Maybe we should.
Yeah, it's castle upkeep, you know, lots of...
Yeah, but the castle is supposed to have debris and tumbleweeds and dead
Lots of cobwebs, lots of cobwebs.
Stuff on the back porch. If we hose it off, it won't be on brand.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
So,
also, if you have any other feedback for the show, get yourself to castleofspirits.com and reach out through the many, many ways that you have to reach out to us.
One of those, we now have our very own phone number at the castle. That's
what?
Right. The castle is hooked up to the 1980s, and it has a phone.
Wow. Is it a 1-800 number? No, it's not.
It's not a 1-800 number. It is, if you want to get a pen, or you can just check out the website, our socials, whatever. We'll be splashing this phone number all over the place. But you can call us and just say hi, give us some feedback. You can be weird if that's what you want. I mean, we can't stop you. And we might even like it. But you can also verbally tell us your story in our voicemail, which I think is 3 minutes long.
There is a 3-minute limit on that voicemail message. So make sure before you call that you kind of have your ducks in a row. And yeah, and then tell us your story.
The phone number is 801-436-7838.
That's 801-436-7838.
Give us a ring-a-ding.
Standard rates apply. Is that what you say?
There's no rates. There's no rates. You know, if texting is your jam, you can text too.
We have the most...
We are so technologically advanced here at the castle.
Advanced castle I've ever been to.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the only castle you've ever been to.
Well, I mean, you know, I'd like to present myself as a worldly person, so you don't have to tell them that.
It's the only castle he's ever been to.
And speaking of messages, although these did not come through the phone just yet,
mm-hmm.
we have a couple of messages that I wanted to read from some of our listeners.
Yeah.
If that's all right.
Do it.
First, we got a message from Jeff. And Jeff writes, after listening to this week's podcast, and in this case, he was talking about the episode called A Plethora of Ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
I was curious to know more about the term Laja Blaze. We read a story called The Laja Blaze.
Yep.
So I Googled it and I found this. And I'm going to add a link in the show notes to this Wikipedia article called La Diablesse. And it's basically a character in Caribbean folklore. According to folklore, she was an enslaved African woman who made a deal with the devil to give her soul to him, becoming a demi-demon in exchange for eternal beauty. And she sure sounds like a looker. Her hideous face is hidden by a large brimmed hat, and her long dress hides the fact that one leg ends in a cow hoof.
So she really made out on the eternal beauty end of the bargain, huh?
Forgot to indicate beautiful to whom and to what, you know, in what world she would be considered beautiful. But hey, you know, it is all in the eye of the beholder.
That's true.
And I have never seen a woman with a cow hoof for a foot, but you never know.
You might like it.
So thank you, Jeff, for that. That adds an interesting note to our Laja Blaze podcast there. And then there was an email from Christy. She said, I was just listening to your episode, A Presence in the Woods. And Christy says, you were talking about why is it that intense experiences seem to happen more at night? Could it be that deep down in our primal nature, we're still terrified of what's in the dark and what we can't see?
Mm-hmm.
Could it be possible that our fear is potentially feeding or giving the presence / entity power?
Oh, that's a good point.
It's something that's bandied about among many occult circles, that by going to a haunted place, we're allowing them to make themselves known. And then she mentions something else we spoke about in that episode. As for your preference of whether it's a dead person or a live person making noise in your house, she says, live people, yeah, there's definitely a potential danger. A dead person, well, there are stories about being attacked, scratches, bruises, and being hit. I've experienced the scratching. So yeah, I'd probably pee my pants either way.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you very much, Christy, for that. I have never been scratched by anything but a cat, that beast that you just heard in the background,
mm-hmm.
the castle cat, Mr. Moon.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he didn't do it on purpose.
I think he did. You didn't hear him snicker afterward.
If you have ever been scratched by something in the middle of the night and you don't have cats, tell us your story.
Yep. If you've ever seen a decapitated figure floating around in the backyard, but you went to work anyway, we want to hear that too. What would it take? Here's a good question, a hypothetical question. What paranormal event would you miss work for, or at least be late for? Like this aunt, she was not having it. That's peculiar and gross. Gotta go.
Yeah.
So what would make you go, you know what, work can wait, and stop to check out? We want to know.
And conversely, what would make you go to work on your day off that was happening at home?
Oh, yeah.
You're like, you know, I'm going to work today.
What could drive you out of your house and make you go to work?
We want to know these things.
You can respond to us on the website. There's all kinds of ways. You can go to the lounge, or you can email us, or you can text us, or you can call us on our brand new phone number. There's always a way to get your message to us. You can send it through the ether if you want. Our Ethernet is broken, though, so we might not get that. Speaking of emails, I do have an email to read. So James emailed us, and he said, I read on your site long ago a story where an old lady can see a ghost or shadow approaching her in her mirror, and it ends up taking her. Later in the story, it does the same thing to a young girl home alone after her family have moved into the old lady's house. I can't seem to remember the title or find it anymore. I was wondering if you may know the one I'm thinking of. I would very much like to read it again. And Vince, I did a little bit of searching around on the website a couple times, and I was not able to find that story either. So if anyone
we're thinking
out there,
that it either may have crossed over away from the website and into that aforementioned ether.
The ether.
Or maybe it was a mistake. Maybe it was from some other website. Maybe it was a creepypasta or something like that. But either way, if anybody out there, if that sounds familiar, let us know what that is so that we can better find it on the website or direct James to where it was that he found that story originally. We're here to help.
We are.
Scare your pants off. But we're also here to help you find the things that scare you the most.
Vince just likes it when pants are off.
I do indeed, especially my own. And speaking of, do you hear that?
Oh no, does the music coming down the hallway now mean that your pants are coming off?
Zip!
Wow.
No indeed. It means that it is time to feed the ghosts. We are, after all, the ghost keepers, and as ghost keepers, we must keep the ghosts fed. Otherwise, they will eat our souls and our pants.
In that order.
Yes. If it was the other way around, I'd let them just take the pants off.
Don't be filthy.
There's no filth in the castle.
There's no filth allowed in the castle.
So thank you very much for listening to the Castle of Spirits True Ghost Stories podcast. If you have any suggestions about how we can improve the show, let us know. If you love the show, tell a friend. That really helps.
And if you hate it, tell two enemies.
Yes, because you're helping spread the word. And that word is boo.